This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
Harriet Shing is the Upper House member for Eastern Region and she is Victoria's only out lesbian MP. Welcome, Harriet.
Thank you so much. It's absolutely gorgeous to be with you.
It's fantastic to have you here. Harriet, member for Eastern Province, and what area does that take in the Upper House?
It's a pretty huge area, actually, Macca. I cover the area from Pakenham right out to Mallacoota on the New South Wales border, and that covers the Latrobe Valley, where I have my office, and Phillip Island and the High Country. So it's enormously diverse. There are a lot of very, very different communities and industries and sectors there. It's a pretty wonderful place to live and to work. And I'm the only Labor member at a state or federal level, so I've definitely got a lot of driving miles already clocked up. And it's just about making sure that everyone has the best possible access that they can have to me as a state representative.
Well, if I voted where I was born, I could vote for you. I was born in Warragul.
Yeah, okay, that's in fact where I live. So Warragul's a fantastic town.
Well, don't say the street, but I lived in Sutton Street.
I, in fact, live just around the corner from where you grew up. Sutton wow, Street's a pretty long street, though.
It is. It's very, very... Originally, we lived next to the cemetery, which was nice and quiet.
I walk my dogs around the cemetery on a very regular basis as we're en route to the park.
Fantastic. So, with such a diverse electorate and such a huge electorate, there's got to be a couple of issues that are not just on a personal level, but on an electorate level that are front and centre. What are they?
At the moment, and you'll read a lot about this in the headlines and hear a lot about it, we've got a huge economic transition happening in the Latrobe Valley. As we all know, the Hazelwood Power Station will cease its production and the coal mine will stop producing from the end of March. So,
and a very good thing that is, I think.
There's a huge change afoot. And after we saw the privatisation in the mid-90s, when thousands of people lost their jobs, there's understandably a really huge level of fear and frustration and scepticism about the support that will be provided. We've been working just about around the clock at a state level to provide assistance for those workers. As well as that, we've got the timber industry as well, which is a huge manufacturer and industry employer, as well as supply chain work. And we're looking at some significant changes and how to tackle them around plantation timber and moving away from the old growth supply. And we've got a number of other areas of the community that are continuing to grow. So tourism, you know, everyone knows about Phillip Island, but the nature tourism and outdoor adventure markets and retail and hospitality are continuing to grow. So it's a really diverse part of the world. We've got everything from some of the most spectacular beaches and mountains you'll ever find through to the foothills and again the Latrobe Valley. Some amazing work going on, really, really wonderful and resilient and very proud communities and very diverse as well. So it's an absolute privilege to be amongst it all. Obviously, always challenges, but it's wonderful to be able to tackle them and to, you know, to do the right thing by the people who've made me their boss. Well, they're actually my boss, to put it the other way around. Yeah.
One of the challenges there is obviously the geography, but the diversity of that electorate. And, you know, you've got regional centres, you've got very, very small towns, you've got some important industries. Obviously, dairy is a hugely important part of that. How do you balance all those competing demands, you know, so they all get your time? That alone has got to be a huge challenge.
I work very much on a relationships basis. So I have worked really hard to build relationships with people across all of those sectors and industries and the communities that I represent. And it's about making sure that I have good planning in place. My office is fantastic at being able to make sure I'm in generally the right place at generally the right time, and balancing that with Parliament. And it's also about doing justice to every voice in the community as well. So the Gippsland Pride Collective is a really fantastic group that does amazing work as far as outreach and engagement, not just with kids from the LGBTIQ communities, but also people who are from older age brackets as well, who've often experienced some lifelong challenges that are really quite confronting and come to the fore every time we talk about these things in public politics as well.
I wish they'd had that at Warragul High School in 1972 when I kicked the door off the cupboard.
Yeah, well, I'm the Safe Schools Ambassador, so we're seeing some fantastic progress in that regard.
And we've got a message here
from Druin.
Greetings from Druin.
Hi, so, Druin.
There you go. So there's one vote. Mark that one down.
I stopped in at the bakery there just yesterday, so big shout out to everyone there.
I'm very keen to have a conversation about, and maybe after we come back from our short sponsors break, but I'm very keen to have a conversation about what it's like to be an out lesbian and what does that mean in Parliament and what's your experience of that, but also in your own electorate. Tell us, what's it like to be an out lesbian in Victorian Parliament?
And sitting on all that green leather up there.
It's actually
red.
And it's not even leather. It's in fact velvet, which is a little bit confronting because they've only recently replaced it. And prior to that, it had indentations from generations of politicians who'd been sitting there for hours and hours while bills were debated and went through the committee stage, which can often go into the wee small hours of the morning. And so, you know, seeing the rows where people are very, very clearly sat for extended periods of time is somewhat confronting from a hygiene perspective. But now we've actually just had new benches installed. So I was very quick to thank everyone who'd been involved in that. It's a really rigorous environment to be in. Obviously, everyone has their own personal and political agendas to achieve while they're there, and politics is a pretty rough business, and it can get very intense and it can get very personal. One of the things that I found really challenging when I was first elected was the fact that I was I had the option to become a role model and to become a spokesperson for the community,
is that something you ever aspired to, or did you just stumble into
actually,
that role?
Actually, no, and I think that happens for a lot of people.
Yes, it does.
That it's never quite an intention to go out and to become a point of reference for people in the community. And yet, when I was elected, somebody pointed out to me that I was not only the first woman to be elected to the Eastern Victoria region of Parliament, but the first out woman as well ever in the history of Victorian Parliament. And it's kind of tragic, as well as being a good thing, because it means that there will, you know, there's a starting point and things can continue to improve from here as far as a more representative parliament. I think also the first Asian Australian woman as well. I tick a fair few boxes when it comes to diversity.
You're a diversity queen, I think.
I am a diversity queen. But one of the things that I found very early on was that in taking on the role as the Safe Schools Ambassador, and in talking about the level of discrimination, and that can be really quite overt. It can be also very, very scathing, very, very hurtful and very malicious. That doesn't stop simply because you're elected. There have been some really difficult challenges for me in listening to what it is that people have had to say, not just about our communities, but about me. You know, that takes a thick skin. I'm not going to pretend that it's not deeply confronting to be told that, issues that we face, that we have a very unique experience of around isolation, discrimination, a greater incidence of anxiety and depression and self-harm and lower income capacity, that these sorts of things are, in fact, not worth consideration by people who've never experienced them.
And you know, Harriet, there are some of our community leaders, and one that we've actually notably had on this very program, who simply say, I just don't believe it. I don't believe the evidence.
Mm.
So it's part of that whole post-truth sort of phenomenon that's occurring, where we've got community leaders. I'm going to name her. It was Pauline Hanson, who actually said, I do not believe the link between discrimination and depression and anxiety.
And it's almost akin to the climate change denial movement.
It is, isn't it?
Really. You look at the evidence, you look at the way in which people over an entire lifetime can have an aggregate of negative experiences, and in the same way that if you tell somebody that they're worthless 1,000 times, they will start to believe it. If somebody's exposed to different levels and types of discrimination, if somebody's exposed to those judgmental opinions and side glances and backstabbing and white-anting simply for who they are, that builds up. And anyone who can't actually see that and appreciate that for what it is and recognise that everybody in the community who is at risk of depression, anxiety, self-harm or tragically suicide really needs and deserves help, not just reactively but proactively. We have an obligation, and I have an obligation as a public representative. I don't always get it right, but I'm trying really, really hard to actually to be a role model, as much to send a message to young people who are in the process of making their own journey, as well as to older Victorians who like the fact that there is more diversity in the parliament.
And that's a great segue, because at one of our fans, we call him 317, him.
Hi, 317.
We don't even know that 317 is a him, actually, has actually just come in and said that they have seen you at a workplace and diversity forum where you spoke recently, and obviously wants to put out a shout out to you.
Thank you so much. That's really lovely feedback. I try to be as directly engaged as I possibly can for workplace diversity and for all sorts of discussions on actually engaging and pride. And as the Premier said repeatedly, pride's the opposite of shame. And I've been through that journey. I still actually go through it. There are moments where, you know, I've had to come out 6 or 7 times a day and I'm exhausted from it. And
it's never ending, isn't it?
It's never ending.
Straight people never understand that.
I can give you a good line, Harriet.
Tell me.
When you meet someone and they're giving you a little thing, you say, actually, when did you realise you were straight?
Yes. Well, I keep asking everyone from the conservative side of politics where the gay manual is, because if I'd had it when I was growing up, rather than being exposed to Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90210, where you couldn't even find an Asian person, let alone someone who was out, it's one of those situations where it would have made the journey a lot easier for me, but unfortunately that doesn't exist.
I have to intervene, I'm sorry, but my very gorgeous cousin Nikos is listening from the south of Greece in Sparta. And he says, oh, my God, I love the way she speaks.
Hi, Nikos. Thank you.
What electorate's he in?
Well, I've got no idea. Oh. He's in Sparta.
No, in Australia.
No, he lives in Greece.
Oh, well.
He's listening from Greece.
He's an Australian citizen. He must have a postal vote.
You're quite the diaspora. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
I think one of the... I wanted to ask you, Harriet. So in the upper house, it's a... a diverse group. Some might say there's a small basket of deplorables. I'll say that. But you've got to work... the crossbench up there is quite interesting. Fiona Patton, a good friend of our community and a good friend of the station. But you've got, you know, the Shooters Party, you've got the DLP, you've got the Greens.
It's quite a broad
range of people. An interesting group of people.
In fact, when I was first elected, a friend of mine made a cake to celebrate, and she actually decorated the top of the cake with the various representatives using jubes, and there were some little guns, and there was Fiona Patton was there, represented in a very saucy jelly baby form, which was pretty great. Yeah, absolutely. And there are a couple of sharks in there as well. So the great challenge in the upper house is the diversity. But, I mean, that results in a better rigour as far as the process of considering legislation is concerned. Fiona and I are very good mates. I hope she's listening now.
We have
a whale of a time, particularly when we've been sitting until all hours of the night and you're looking for somebody with an equivalent level of insanity to where you're at after being awake for 18 hours. It is difficult, and particularly when we debate issues around safe schools, around anti-discrimination legislation, having people comment around the importance of progressive politics privately and then vote against it publicly is really tough. And after talking about safe schools, for example, I had six people come up to me from the other side of the house privately and say, you spoke really well and it was really heartfelt and congratulations on being so personally engaged in discussing the importance of safe schools, only to then vote against it and to condemn it. And that's really difficult.
Well, you know, I've had a number of discussions with Matthew Guy about anti-discrimination legislation. And, you know, what he says is fantastic, but how they vote is another matter. And this is what really annoys me.
And that's what matters at the end of the
day,
they vote.
You know, hypocrisy is hypocrisy, guys. I'd respect you much more if you just say, you know what, we actually like the fact that you're a second-class citizen. We want to keep you as a second-class citizen. We're going to use your taxes to fund organisations that are going to treat you like a second-class citizen, and we're going to enshrine that in legislation. But, hey, how about you vote for me?
That's right. And I met with the Australian Christian Lobby, who asked to catch up with me very, very early on in my term. I'll note that as just an editorial comment. Thanks, Macca. Your words, not mine. I met with them and had a chat with them, and one of the things that they said was we actually believe that, in fact, the primary interests of the traditional compact of marriage and of the way in which education is provided shouldn't be disturbed. And I said, well, on that basis, I don't know why you're talking to me, because if we preserve the traditional ideas of who gets into parliament, who's allowed to vote and who's allowed to have an education, women would be out of that equation entirely.
And part of that idea, you know, was that the people that actually got in there were property owners and taxpayers. Well, of course, the Christian Lobby might get in as property owners, but the churches wouldn't get in as taxpayers.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The tax treatment for churches is a very hot topic, and as is transparency and reporting, and that's something which, again, is also a very challenging issue and one that's a difficult set of conversations, particularly after many, many decades of abuse, of mistreatment, of secrecy. And that's another thing which I think we're starting to get some sunlight on now.
Look, what has been in the news lately, and, you know, the Royal Commissions, the Victorian Government inquiries, other government inquiries, into the churches. Now, I know my view on this is quite controversial. These organisations are criminal organisations. Hear me out. They shelter pedophiles, right? They move them from parish to parish. They don't keep records. They deny it. The crimes committed by those people are crimes. And the churches, all of them, are complicit in it. And they are criminal organisations. Now, I know not everyone is going to agree with me on that, but think about it. Any other organisation did that, those organisations would be held to account, not slapped, you know, with a two-day-old piece of snapper.
Do you think any organisation would be held to account? If you look at the way that the veil of secrecy operates across, you know, you look at the military and the way in which discussions around don't ask, don't tell have you know, taken a long time to come to the fore, of hazing, of the way in which particular sectors operate. I think even in sport, though, I mean, in the AFL, for example, and it's great that we've got an opportunity to talk more about that in the women's context later, but looking at the way in which the reasons that these tribal constructs work really, really well is because everybody's on the same page, and that also often involves being quite closed about discussing problems, and cracking that nut is very, very difficult. We've seen it with family violence as well, and that's why that Royal Commission was so important too.
You have a point, Harriet, but I think those other organisations are escaping the law in a lot of ways, but they're not doing it on the scale and the frequency.
And Macca, this has happened for a long time.
Yeah, this is
and
not.
You don't change these things overnight.
This is not. This is
but
not
having
something.
A discussion about it like we are today is actually the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.